Welcome to episode 12 of Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie and I'll be bringing you the news, reviews, interviews and recommendations of the latest must-see theatre. We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, the next hot ticks and friendly advice on where to sit and get those best tickets. So I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and a happy new year from me. There are some fantastic shows opening this year, and other than realising that I have a bit of a theatre addiction, I've already booked for the following shows. So in February, Endgame at the Old Vic, Upstart Crow at the Gielgud Theatre, Prince of Egypt at the Dominion, and Be More Chill at the Other Palace. You can look forward to reviews from me on City of Angels at the Garrick Theatre in March, and in April I'll be going to see Hairspray at the London Coliseum. I've even booked tickets for November. They shoot horses, don't they, at the Bridge Theatre. So in January, I'm looking forward to seeing The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe at the Bridge Theatre and Coming Clean at the Trafalgar Studio with an interview with the producer, Darren Murphy. And I look forward to seeing The Strange Tale of Charlie Chaplin and Stan Laurel. This is at the Wilton's Music Hall, which I've never been to before, and I look forward to speaking to my friend Sarah, who's playing the title role in this show. And now onto the main reviews. Preview of Sleepless, a musical romance at the Troubadour Wembley Park. My Brilliant Friend, parts 1 and 2 at the Olivier at the National Theatre, with a backstage interview with Ben Turner, who plays the role of Nino Saratore. And The Greatest Play in the History of the World by Ian Kershaw at the Trafalgar Studios, starring Julie Hesmenthal. Sleepless, a musical romance at the Troubadour Wembley Park Theatre. So this is a new venue for me. I'm excited. This is where Warhorse was recently and Fame has just opened. So I've been to the Troubadour at White City and I saw Peter Pan there and reviewed this in episode 2 of Theatre Audience Podcast. I talked in detail about how excited I was about this great new venue and the versatility of these new innovative spaces. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing what this sister venue has in store. So these are the exclusive previews prior to the world premiere of Sleepless. So this is an enchanting, romantic musical comedy. It's based on the original screenplay Sleepless in Seattle. So for me, this will be a bit of 90s rom-com film nostalgia. In the original film, we have Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan and Bill Pullman. And it's about an 8-year-old Jonah who phones in a Seattle radio show and gets his dad Sam to talk on air about the heartbreaking loss of his mother. Sam is an instant hit with the ladies across the whole of America. And 3,000 miles away, journalist Annie asks if Sam could be more than just a news story to her. So this is a long-awaited world premiere. This is following years of rumours and speculation. And after this preview run of 3 shows, they will undergo a series of final tweaks before an official opening, which will be in March 2020. So we've got Michael DeXavier as Sam. So he's an English actor. He's played Phantom of the Opera and Oklahoma and Pajama Game. And then we've got Kimberly Welsh as Annie, and she's from Girls Aloud. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they can bring in this innovative venue. So it's the interval at Sleepless, and I'm here with Rachel. What are we thinking of this show?
I'm loving it.
I love it. It might be the wine, it might be the festive feels, but I am absolutely loving it.
And this is literally the first show preview, and the projection is fantastic.
The projection is amazing. Well, we were just saying to the guy at the bar that the set is stunning. He said, well, that's nothing. This is only the preview set. When they kick off properly in March, they're going to have a whole amazing set as well as a projection. So that's pretty exciting.
It's so simple as well. And what's beautiful is that the Troubadour, I mean, I've been to the one at White City, and this is the first time that we've been to this one. What's great is there is no dud seat. Everyone has got a fantastic view. It's more of a sort of
panoramic horizon. We can see everything, and it's just visually beautiful. The seats are comfy. It's more like being at the cinema.
There's a lot to be said for a modern theatre.
It's just wonderful.
Seats are comfortable. The toilets are exceptional.
Hundreds of toilets.
Hundreds of toilets. Hundreds of spaces at the bar.
Yeah.
It's spacious and airy, and you don't have that kind of stuffy feeling of, you know, some of the old theatres.
Yeah,
just
having such a lovely fun
time. Merry Christmas.
So Rachel and I have just come out of the second half of Sleepless, the musical, and we really enjoyed that, didn't we?
Really enjoyed it.
I wasn't expecting to, if I'm perfectly honest. I kind of thought, I just don't know. I love the film in a very kind of romantic comedy, kitsch, girly kind of way.
Yeah.
So I just really wasn't sure. A bit like Pretty Woman's coming out, and you kind of think, not quite sure, because it's all about Meg Ryan, it's all about Tom Hanks, and so how can that be matched? But I thought Kimberly Walsh did a really great job.
I thought Kimberly Walsh did an excellent job. I thought her voice sounded great. I really like her speaking voice. I thought her performance was really strong. I think the musical theatre critics are going to think cheesy.
Yeah.
And the musical theatre lovers love it, because it's a great story, and they've told it through some pretty good music. It's not going to change your life, but it's lovely.
They're doing this preview, and then we've heard that they're then doing like a 2 month rehearsal period.
2 months more.
We just filled out a massively long questionnaire. It was like, oh my god, I'm so tired. So they're definitely getting our feedback in order to perfect and improve. I definitely think the first half I loved it. The second half, there were moments where we just giggled, but it was kind of cute giggle. It was like, I'm enjoying this, and like, I did turn and go, fromage, but in a I love it kind of way.
Yeah,
totally. But I did think at times in the second half, maybe the songs were a little bit repetitive, a bit sort of Into the Woods, where you kind of go, oh, it's one really long, continuous song.
And there were a few little bits that weren't as polished. I imagine when it comes to the real deal, they'll have a bit more choreography. I think the choreography was quite basic. Yeah, some of the songs were a bit repetitive, and I think probably because there wasn't much choreography, they felt more repetitive because there wasn't as much going on.
But I think as well, because the nature of the film is it's this rom-com where they never really quite meet right until that last moment. And you kind of want them to meet and do a duet. And there is a duet moment, but they're kind of like...
They haven't met.
It's almost like the Grease back-to-back. We're in different environments.
Exactly.
We haven't met yet.
And you want just a little bit of their story after the moment of meeting, but they meet, and then he puts his arm around her,
and then 10 years later,
and that's it, they're off. You want just a
Jonah
little
Jonah coming out of university or something, you know, and then like a graduation,
college,
the hats fly up
school.
Or something.
Yeah.
I think really, really, really enjoyed it. I definitely recommend it. We had a laugh.
We had a great time.
And it's very Christmassy in here. I do think it's very good Christmas show, and it's going to come out in March.
Exactly.
Although and there's lots of references to Valentine's Day, because obviously they meet on the Empire State Building Valentine's Day, but it's almost sad that it's going to come out sort of mid-March.
Maybe they hammed up the Christmas element at the beginning of time.
Because we're here, and we've got a massive tree here, and you can hear the Christmas songs in the background.
Maybe worth noting that we just met Kimberly Walsh, had a little chat
a brief chat and a photo,
and she seems to think that it went well.
Yeah.
And
all the cast are milling around with all their friends and family. It's a real kind of like...
It's lovely.
See how it's going.
Yeah.
And this venue, I don't know if I mentioned it before, but I really love the fact that it's everyone can see everything. It's comfy and spacious. Good feng shui.
And the toilets.
Loads.
Just lovely.
Which means you actually get an interval with your friend. You can have a drink in the interval. It's not like rush, rush, rush. And we did.
Yeah.
So thank you, Rachel. Thank you. It was such a fun evening.
Great night.
I think.
Sleepless, a musical romance, So this was brimming with all the charm of the much-loved film. It was a musical romance, and it was brought to life with a full orchestra, which we saw on stage. This was a jazz-inspired score, and the music was by Robert Scott, lyrics by Brendan Cull, and a book by Michael Burdett. So our director was Morgan Young, who has recently directed Big in the West End. So he's obviously looking at the films of Tom Hanks and reviving these as musicals at the moment. The set design was by Morgan Large, and we spoke about the video design, which was fantastic, by Ian William Galloway. So our boy was Job Hart, who played the part of Jonah, and he was absolutely superb, fantastic little singer, actor and dancer, so very much an up-and-coming young musical theatre star. We should also mention that Alex Fobister played the part of Rob, his best friend, and Dylan Turner played the part of Walter. He was very funny. As we mentioned earlier in our review, Kimberly Walsh was Annie, and she was absolutely fantastic and had the quirks that we saw in Meg Ryan from the film. And Michael D. Xavier was really strong as Sam. He's a fantastic singer and actor with great onstage chemistry and stage presence. Top tips for Sleepless, a musical romance. So don't be put off by the fact that the Troubadour Wembley Park Theatre is out of town. The Jubilee line is really speedy and it is a 5-minute walk from the station. It is a great venue and something that everyone should experience. The staff are incredibly friendly and there are loads of toilets. There was no programme for this show as it is in pre-previews, and so therefore we're excited for March as lots of changes are going to be made based on our questionnaires and feedback from the productions that we saw. It's endearing, it's heartwarming, it's a romantic comedy, and it's highly recommended by me. It's an hour and 55 minutes, including an interval, and we look forward to this coming out in March 2020. My Brilliant Friend, parts 1 and 2 at the National Theatre. So I've arrived at the Olivier Theatre and you can hear the background music. They've got lots of Italian songs playing in the background. So this production opened on the 12th of November 2019, sort of in rep with translations, which I spoke about on a previous episode of Theatre Audience Podcast, and it runs until the 22nd of February. So there's plenty of opportunity to come and see this show. So this is an acclaimed stage adaptation. It condenses Elena Ferrante's 4 Neapolitan novels into one play. It's presented in 2 parts and it's adapted by April De Angelis. So this is a reworked staging for the Olivier stage by Melly Still. So My Brilliant Friend and the story of New Name into part 1, and Those Who Leave and Those Who Stay and the story of the lost child into part 2. So this is following a sold-out run at the Rose Theatre in Kingston. And Niamh Cusack and Catherine McCormack return to play Lenu and Leela, the protagonists in this production. So the blurb says, when the most important person in her life goes missing without trace, Lenu Greco, now a celebrated author, begins to recall a friendship of more than 60 years. So it's set in post-war Naples, and friends Lenu and Leela experience turbulent social and political change, from the rise of the Camorra to the sexual revolution. We see them journey through Naples and Florence from 1952 right up until 2011. We see the transformation of their neighbourhood city and nation. Even as life repeatedly tries to pull them in separate directions, they remain inextricably bound to one another. I'm very much looking forward to watching part 1 and part 2 in one day and having a chat with actor Ben Turner, who plays the part of Nina Serratore, in between part 1 and part 2. So here's our conversation. So I'm backstage with actor Ben Turner, who's playing Nino in My Brilliant Friend.
Hi.
So we're at the National Theatre in the press office.
I know.
And you've just done part one in the Olivier. Mm-hmm. So tell me about the demands of doing a two-part show in one day.
Well, I mean, I think having to do matinees are always a bit of a, you know, a bit of a struggle for any actor. Especially when you're kind of mid-run, you know, when you've done however many 3 months or something like that, 4 months on a show, to have to continually kind of churn out 8 shows a week can be quite difficult. It's the first time I've had to do a two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's quite nice not having to go back and repeat what you've already done. I think that sometimes is the real slog about doing a matinee, is that, you know, you've had a great show, but then actually you have to reset everything and go back to the beginning and do it all again and tell the whole story again. Whereas with a two-parter, you just kind of keep moving forward. And that's actually quite nice, because it doesn't feel quite so tiring, taxing. You know, you're not having to recreate. Mm. You're just having to kind of keep telling the story. So actually, it's quite enjoyable.
Mm. So I suppose you get to tell more of the journey of the story of your own character.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it has an effect on the audience as well, because, it, you know, if you, especially if you come to do 2 shows in a day, if you're that audience member.
That's me.
That's
today.
You. Is that what you're doing? Yeah.
I've done part one, and I'm looking forward to part two.
So hopefully, you know, when you go back to part two, you're invested a bit more in the characters. Mm. Because you've seen where they've come from. You know, especially in a show like this, where we all sort of start off as kids. You know, this show spans, I think, 4 decades and some, actually. So by the time you've come to join us in play two, you've seen the whole of the 50s have happened, the whole of the 60s have happened, and we're just going into the 70s. So, you know, the outfits have changed.
Yes.
You know, everyone's got different wigs on, and, you know,
yeah, we've got beautiful hairstyles, beautiful. And we've got the music changes as well.
Yeah, the music is incredible.
It's very clever.
But you know what the weird thing is as well about doing a matinee sometimes, is that sometimes your best shows are matinees, just because you're just a bit more relaxed. Mm. You know, it's an earlier start to the day, you've probably done a show the night before, so, you know, when you do a show, it's hard to just go home and go straight to bed, so chances are you're up till whatever, at least midnight, 1, 2 sometimes. Mm-hmm. Just trying to kind of wind down. So when you come in the following day, you're a bit tired, but as a result of that, you're quite relaxed on stage. So a lot of the times, yeah, matinees just can really take you by surprise, actually. Mm. In terms of how good the show felt and how responsive the audience were, and so yeah, it's quite, I'm kind of enjoying it, really.
You know? So talk to me about Nino. So I've seen him very young,
yeah,
and then sort of growing up through teenage years and coming out of university.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we've left off.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, My Brilliant Friend is a very kind of specific world. You know, it's a very poor neighbourhood in Naples, and it was a time when sort of women were really more sort of functional, really, or considered sort of commodities by the men. And they were, you know, it's a bit of a generalization, but on the whole, they were pretty badly treated by men, you know. Especially in that Italian sort of neighborhood, rough neighborhood. So it made for very, you know, they were very tough, a lot of these women. And I suppose what Nino does is that he's a character who's just quite forward thinking when it comes to the liberation of women, and he loves women, do you know what I mean? And he kind of loves everything about them, and I think he finds them sort of fascinating, and for that period, for a guy to be very liberal in terms of his view towards women was very unusual, you know. Mm. Very unheard of.
Well, he's very studious
and he's
very educated,
yeah,
in comparison to maybe his father, who doesn't
100%
doesn't really respect his
and
wife.
I think that was his escape, do you know what I mean? He was like, he's clearly not like any of the guys, you know. It's a machismo world.
Mm.
And he's not really a machismo kind of guy, you know. He doesn't have any violence in him, he doesn't fight, so I think his studying was about getting out of the hood. Mm. You know what I mean, getting out of the neighbourhood. just didn't want to be like his father. And also he can see his father sort of disrespecting his mum, which he really doesn't like. So he runs in the complete opposite direction. He's like, I'm getting out of here, and the only way to do this really is to study. And he reads everything. And he's read literally every, you know, piece of work on sort of feminine literature. You know, he's sort of his specialist subject. Now the irony is that unfortunately he...
Is this a spoiler alert?
Little part two.
Okay. Go on.
But he does... How can I put it without giving too much... He does... He's definitely his father's son.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Oh dear.
And that does start to come out. In a different way. But... He's it's funny because a lot of people come and see Play One and they're like, oh my god, I really like your character, he's so nice, he's forward thinking, and then Play Two they're like, oh,
angry with your character.
Oh, I see, I didn't quite see that one coming, you know. And he kisses quite a lot of people, and you know, which is also a bit of a new one for me on stage, which can be quite nerve wracking, but I'm desperate to like him. I just wish he behaved himself a little bit more.
And so how do you prepare for a role like Nino? What was the rehearsal like? Because effectively, I mean, both productions are 2 hours 35 minutes ish, including interval. That's a lot of material. It is rehearsing two full plays.
It is. I mean, look, you can quite easily spend 7 weeks on one show. Do you know what I mean? I've done that in the past on shows. This one, I think we had 7.5, 8 weeks to do both parts. And, you know, and it feels like a luxury, that, because a lot of the times, you know, you'll rehearse something for 5 weeks. And certainly my family were like, oh, you know, that's a good amount of time, you know, 8 weeks. But actually, if you split it in half, it's 4 weeks on a play. And this show is so huge. In terms of, you know, there's not a huge amount of set going on, you know what I mean? As you've seen, we've got four...
Very clever.
Yeah, we've got four staircases on wheels. So just the dance of those stairs...
And you, the mood and the...
Yeah, and moving it into...
And remembering which one that was. I was thinking, oh gosh, how do you know that's your sixth scene change?
Honestly, if you look at the floors, there's so much tape
on
those
floors. I've noticed, because I'm literally right at the front of the circle in the middle, which is brilliant. And I didn't notice the markings until, I think, probably the interval.
When the
lighting had changed slightly, and I was like, oh my God. And I was like, are they numbered? How are they remembering? Yeah. And it goes, this angle.
It's hard, and sometimes we get it wrong. Do you know what I mean? The stage management have to come on and be like, so we'll be mid-scene, and suddenly the stairs are just moving around a bit.
Meant to come down. There's no staircase.
Exactly. So it was a monster, and and I'll be honest with you, we felt a little bit... a little bit under rehearsed, you know, in terms of the detail and the scenes and this and that, because there was so much emphasis on the production values of the show and the lighting and the sound, and which are incredible in this show.
The
projection,
what I mean? As well.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And the soundscape is
beautiful.
It's so brilliant.
Clever. Yeah. Sets the scene.
Yeah.
And how did you rehearse 4 weeks on what, like you said, was it
we kept
were
it moving
simultaneous?
No, so we started at the beginning and literally just worked our way through the whole sequence and then went back and kind of did the whole two shows again and then went back and kind of worked details. And, you know, it kind of has its pros and its cons, because it's great to kind of continue the journey arc, so to speak, or the narrative arc. But at the same time, sometimes you won't come back to that scene that you did in play one for two weeks. And you're like, well, what did I do? Do you know what I mean? I can't remember. Was it state? So there's this period of like catch up. You know what I mean? And you know, in many ways, the unsung heroes of any production really are the stage management. You know, because bless her, Stevie, you know, our stage manager, she's there writing, trying to write down all the moves as they are happening. So then when we come back to it 3 weeks later, we're like, well, I can't remember what we did. And Stevie's
even though
like,
you've written it on your own script.
Obviously. Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. And then Stevie's like, oh no, you come in here, you go in there, you exit there, and then we change it all.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? So,
How much time did you get rehearsing on the stage? Because I know I spoke to my friend Rufus, who was in Translations.
Yeah.
And that kind of was on for a bit and then went off to make way. Was that for your rehearsal period? Or because you started November, but I think, was it repping?
Yeah, it was. So I've never done anything in rep before. It's the first time for me, and you know, it was certainly very commonplace back in the day. But there's not many theatres that do it so much anymore. But here we so I don't know the exact kind of process of it, but Translations essentially was on at the Olivier. And then they took them off, I think, for nearly 3-4 weeks while they put us on. We had a 2-week tech period, which I've never done before.
And that was because of the complication of the transition.
Yeah, it's huge. And then a 2-week preview period as well.
Well, also, those staircases are massive. You couldn't do that in a rehearsal room anywhere.
You couldn't. I mean, we were lucky.
Really
we had
tall,
they are we
huge
had
huge structures.
The rehearsal rooms at the National are amazing. So you've got the Revolve, you know, so they built mock staircases for us, and we had those pretty much in week one. So we were lucky. So we kind of knew, we got used to the height, we got used to the this, but they weren't the actual stairs. So they had a few sharp edges in there. Do you know what I mean? So so there's always that kind of surprise element when you arrive at a tech and they're like, this is what you look like. This is what the stairs look like. This is what the world looks like. And sometimes that can be a bit of a stretch because you've created it all in your head. You know what I mean? You've imagined what it's like in a rehearsal room.
Yeah.
And suddenly you turn up and you're like, oh no, that's the wig that you're wearing. And you're like,
oh wow.
Really? But I look like, I remember the first wig I put on.
Completely.
It's huge, yeah. I remember the first wig I put on, you know, in week one, it was like down here, you know, and I look like Mowgli from Jungle Book. Do you know what I mean?
The child. Yeah, at the beginning, yeah.
The second one was this sort of weird flat top. Do you know what I mean? And then the third one, I looked like Wolf from Gladiator. Do you know what I mean? I mean, not many people probably get that reference. I'm showing my age, but
I get it.
Do you get it? Okay, all right, good. So you've just got to try and stay loose during a tech like this, and just trust that all the departments are on it. They know what they're doing, but it's not going to come immediately. So a lot of the times you'd put in a request and actually it wouldn't come for 2 weeks, or you'd be given a new bit of equipment or a new costume on the day before press night. Or so it's all about sort of staying loose, I think, as an actor in tech.
So you've done your resume. Give me your little whistle stop resume. I actually saw you in the jungle at the Playhouse.
Did you?
Yeah, I loved that.
Thanks.
What was it like being in something like that? It was a while back now, so.
Yeah, I mean, you say that though, but we then went on to do it in New York, and then we did it in San Francisco. Shows like The Jungle just do not come along often, you know, and it meant everything to me to be involved in something like that, which is a true story about essentially a crisis that is still going on now. And it's everything I love about theatre, The Jungle. You know, it means something. It's uncomfortable. It's interactive is a bit gimmicky word now. It's immersive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and
it
depends on whether you're in the stalls or the circle as well. I was on the White Cliffs, so I was a bit angry. I do like being involved in the action.
The party was definitely downstairs.
Definitely,
you know?
I didn't get any food.
I know. Bless you. Bless
my
you.
My sick formers were with me.
Were they?
Yeah, and a couple of them went back because they loved it so much. I mean, it's not a loving.
No,
thing,
I know what you mean.
Because it was gritty, it was real, it was hard hitting. But they enjoyed the experience, and they were like, "I want to experience it downstairs." So they kind of went back and.
You know, I've never experienced a response to a show like that. Do you know what I mean? And I'm reluctant to say this, but sometimes this profession can feel a little bit sort of paper thin, do you know what I mean, in terms of what we do. I believe that storytelling is so important, especially today, more than ever. But I think a lot of the times what happens is, you know, you come out of drama school, you've had this amazing sort of experience of something that feels important and multi-layered and faceted, and it means so much to you, and actually you move into an industry where they're like, oh yeah, come in, you know what I mean, you do your two scenes, you leave, you know, you audition for two scenes or whatever, you leave and you never hear again. And you've put in hours and hours of drama school work towards I have, you know, a mixed background. I'm from London, I'm Hackney, but also my mum is from Iran, you know, so I found myself going up for a lot of, you know, terrorists and shit like that, and I'm just it's just not
typecasting,
it's not difficult. It's not for me, you know. And But at the same time, you want to get in the industry, you need to work, you need to pay the bills. So it's a fine balance. And then something like Jungle comes along, which is, it sort of blurs that line of like entertainment and sort of news, you know what I mean? And
it's educational, isn't it?
It really is.
It's educating people that are going to the theatre that might not know about
100%.
Refugee crisis, or they know about it, but
well,
it's
we all
else
know about it, don't we?
It doesn't
we?
Concern me. Yeah, that kind of. But to hear that these come from true stories,
100%, and to, you know, and to show the people kind of behind the politics. Do you know what I mean? Like, we all think we know what the refugee crisis is. We've all got a viewpoint on it, but actually, none of us really know what's going on. You know. And sometimes a part comes along and a play comes along that sort of stay with you forever, really. Do you know what I mean? And I know that Salah, the character that I played in Jungle, you know, he's kind of made me a better person. Do you know what I mean? Like, I learned a lot from telling that story. Mm. And we've told it for nearly 2 years. And I'm actually...
Wow, so it's a big tour.
It is, and I'm going back to New York.
To do it
one more time.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
One more time. It's too important not to.
No.
You know, and I can't.
Has
leave.
It evolved slightly with it, things that have changed politically, or is it telling the story of then, that moment?
It is. I mean, we've doctored it a little bit here and there. Yeah. We don't want to make it about America. You know, we didn't want to Americanify
it. But yeah, it must feel current. Yeah.
Do you know
yeah.
what I mean? So we didn't want to make it about Trump and about this that. But the great thing about the show in America is that the Jungle was sort of like a Trojan horse.
Yeah.
Because by putting it here in the UK, everyone knows about Calais and Dover and the problem that we have. We took it to New York. A bunch of people came over and they're like, what is it? Oh, Calais? Oh, I don't know. Where is that? They knew nothing about it. So it was sort of this Trojan horse. Do you see what I mean? Because they all sat back and they were like, oh, this has got nothing to do with us. We can just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, no, wait a minute. I'm
and
in
then
this
at the end,
and it's going on around me. And actually, yeah.
And then at the end, they were just
the heart-hitting images on the projection as well.
Yeah, it's horrific, you know. And we're a real family, you know. And we fight very, very hard to tell that story. And but they do not come along often. That's the truth. I mean, I've done some amazing theatre that I'm very proud of. But
you've done loads of theatre, haven't you? And film and TV.
I've done a bit of everything. Yeah, bit of everything.
What would you say would be your biggest advice then to a young person who's entering or looking to enter the acting profession?
So, how young are they? I mean, are they...
I mean, I don't know, maybe
going to drama school or post-drama
school? GCSE drama, they're thinking they want to take it for A-level or go off to drama college, that kind of thing.
Do it. You know, I went to a school where acting wasn't considered a job, you know what I mean? It was considered sort of like a hobby, not a proper job. And I was very lucky that I knew from a very young age, having kind of followed my dad around, who's an actor as well, I just knew that that's all I wanted to do. And the more people told me kind of not to do it or get a proper job, the harder I dug my heels in. And I was just like, listen, this, my dad is my hero. I believe entertainment, or you know, the entertainment industry or whatever, is sort of more important, certainly in the world that I was in, more important than any academia in my world. And actually I wanted to move people through stories, and I think to allow people to escape a little bit is so important, you know. But I will also say that, you know, it's hard work, you know what I mean? It's not this sort of glamorous, you know, movie industry, Hollywood, you know what I mean? It's not, I've been doing this 20 years, you know, the closest to Hollywood I've got is Bulgaria, do you know what I mean? And that was a massive, you know, Warner Brothers film. Do you see what I mean? So a lot of the times what you think, A does not lead to B, and it certainly does not lead to C in this industry, and you just have to find a way of taking that on the chin. You might get lucky, you know,
some people go from A to D.
Yeah, someone might come and see you in drama school, and you're just perfect for that massive franchise that's about to come out, and you land it, and you never look back. But the reality is that the majority of you, us, have to roll our sleeves up and hustle and work and, you know, take it on the chin. Because I couldn't count the amount of no's that I've had. I could count the amount of yeses I've had, maybe even on, do you know what I mean, two hands, maybe four, not that I have them, but do you know
what I mean? Yeah, there's lots here. On your resume, okay, there's lots here. I think fingers and toes with him, fingers and toes.
Maybe a few more. But you know, you've got to be in it for the long mm-hmm. slog, do you know what I mean? If you want to be famous, I think there's a lot of other ways you can do it mm-hmm. nowadays, do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, acting for me is much more about craft and learning, you know what I mean? And I'm still learning today, and I hope that will never stop, really, you know?
Excellent. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
It's been really lovely.
Not at all. Thanks
take
for
taking time between
me.
Part one and part
good.
Two to
all
have
good.
A chat. So
my
thank
pleasure.
You very much.
Enjoy part two.
I will.
So a huge thank you to Ben Turner for taking the time to talk to me between part one and two of My Brilliant Friend at the Olivier Theatre. There were some really honest, great tips and advice for young actors who are wishing to enter the profession. I really enjoyed my epic day of marathon theatre at the Olivier. I saw parts one and two in the same day. So this was over 5 hours of theatre. It was really interesting for me to have this insight into post-war Naples, as my nonna, my grandmother, was Italian. And Elena Ferrante's Neapolitan novels take place in a world which, while starting to open up its opportunities for women, still treats them as secondary to men. So Leela and Linu fight to be taken seriously in the world of education, in work, and in their married life. And this is reflected much upon the Western world at the time. But in Italy, we see them clash with firmly held traditional beliefs and an honour code, especially in the South. And this was sort of devastatingly brought to life by fascism. So this play looks at the struggle for equality and the importance, the improvement of the lives of poor women. And it looks at the beginnings of social feminism. From very early on, both these girls strive for their independence and emancipation. There's a really strong company of actors in this production with outstanding ensemble, and the choreography of the transitions of the moving set pieces by the actors themselves is really impressive. And this was discussed with Ben in our conversation. He was fantastic in this production, and I think it's really exciting to see all these characters go on a journey from sort of age 6, 7 right up through adulthood, and all the actors have to play all these different ages, which really shows how versatile they are. Neve Cusack as Lenu, she was recently in The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. She's a very experienced actress, as I'm sure you know, from theatre, TV, film, famously in sort of Silent Witness and The Virtues. And Catherine McCormack, also incredibly experienced actress, played Lena Cerullo. She was in All My Sons and got an Olivier Award nomination for Best Supporting Actress in that role. I saw her a couple of years back in The Ferryman, and she's brought a brilliant rapport to this piece. The two of them really are a tour de force. I must say that Emily Mitten in the ensemble really stood out as excellent sort of multi-role play. She had a brilliant stage presence as Manuelo Saliera and Maestro Oliviero. And despite the fact that this piece was over 5 hours of theatre, obviously with a huge break in between, I was totally engrossed in the storytelling throughout. And for the first time, I didn't feel like any of it could have been reduced any shorter. So this is highly recommended from me. Top tips for My Brilliant Friend at the National Theatre. So this is running until the 22nd of February. All performances are 2 show days, so your ticket admits you to part 1 at 2 p.m. and part 2 at 7:30 p.m. You can watch these on separate days. Part 1 is 2 hours and 45 minutes with an interval of 20 minutes, as is part 2. You can book tickets well in advance on the National Theatre's website, and they do release lots of £15 tickets for shows, but you need to get in there early. So if you wanted to get tickets for something like Three Sisters, for example, you need to get in there early. They do a special release of tickets on a Friday afternoon. I got a better deal than the website in the end, as I literally checked into the box office before walking into the theatre and got a day seat. So my ticket was £30. This was for both shows. and this was right in the middle of the Royal Circle. So it was row A and it was seat 37, which was dead centre, brilliant view. And these tickets earlier on in the day on the website had been £105. I would advise age 14 or above, as it is a long piece of theatre. There's gunshots, there's violent, there's sexually violent scenes, and some people, it does warn you on the programme that some people may find things distressing. The programme, as always, is £5. As always at the National Theatre, they have a free cast list which has all the information that you need on it. The programme itself is a really interesting read, and they do braille and large print. Don't forget that in between shows you can visit the bookshop, which has plays and books and gifts, and they've also got a massive costume display, so it's almost like going to part of the museum. You could have a backstage tour. They've got talks and events. They've got something called Love, Honour and Jealousy and Marriage in Italy, 1945 to 1970. Actors Neve Cusack and Catherine McCormack, so our protagonists, they're doing a talk on Friday the 10th of January from 3 till 4 at the Olivier. Tickets are £9 and £6. There's a talk about the making of My Brilliant Friend. There's a short history of modern Italy. Playwright April de Angelis and director Melly Still do a talk on the 18th of February. There's learning for young people aged 16 to 21, practical workshops and courses and creative projects. And as always, their access is brilliant. They have smart caption glasses, infrared audio system, captioned performances, and audio described performances. So I highly recommend taking time out and going to see a show at the National Theatre. The greatest play in the history of the world at the Trafalgar Studios. So with award-winning sell-out runs at both the Traverse Theatre in Edinburgh and the Royal Exchange Theatre in Manchester, last year, presented by Tara Finney Productions, this show has transferred for 6 weeks only to the West End. It stars BAFTA nominee Julie Hemmingshall from Broadchurch and Coronation Street. I'm intrigued to see this one-woman show, as I've read some glowing reviews from the previous productions with the sellout run at the Edinburgh Festival. The Evening Standard said, it's expertly directed by Raz Shaw, and the Mail on Sunday said, a love letter to life. The blurb reads, a man wakes up in the middle of the night to discover that the world has stopped. Through the crack in his bedroom curtains, he can see no signs of life at all, other than a light in the house opposite, where a woman in an oversized Bowie t-shirt stands, looking back at him. So The Greatest Play in the History of the World is a great title, and it's a love story, and it's set on Preston Road and also in space and in time. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this has in store. So there was no interval. This show is 1 hour and 10 minutes, and although we did have a false fire alarm in which we had to be evacuated 20 minutes into the show and then returned, there was a moment of sort of hiatus where we sat there thinking, is this part of the show? So the Trafalgar Studios is such a wonderful intimate space. It's great for one-person shows in Studio 2. We have audience of three rows on three sides. I recently saw Black is the Colour of My Voice, which was inspired by the life of Nina Simone, with performer and actress Afia Campbell, which was absolutely superb. In this production, you're kind of at ease from the offset, where Julie chats to audience members and sort of sets you at ease, and then when the lights change and the music comes on, she goes, oh, it's time for me to begin. And then we have this wonderful one-woman monologue. There are a number of characters referred to in the play, and these characters are very, very cleverly represented by placing character-appropriate footwear, which is set in shoeboxes on shelves from the offset. Later in the play, the ex-girlfriends of our protagonist are provided and generously donated by unsuspecting audience members on Julie's persuasive request. I bought a programme which was £3, and I also bought the play, which was £5, and I absolutely love this programme note. So Julie says, I had a notion, a romantic notion, that my husband, the writer Ian, should write a one-woman show for me and we could tour it together into our dotage. A couple of Christmases ago, he kept disappearing to the cellar for an hour at a time, wrapping presents, maybe, I thought. And then he presented me with this lovely thing, a beautiful play, a love story, but a universal one, literally, about learning in time what matters in the end, about leaving a mark on the world and maybe beyond, that shows us the human race in all its glorious messiness, confusion and joy. It was the best present I ever got. And in these dark, confusing times, it offers a bit of love and hope. We hope it feels like a present from us to the audiences who come and see it at Trafalgar Studios. And then Ian writes in his programme notes, Julie Hemenshaw is my favourite actor in the world. She also happens to be my wife. She asked me to write her a play. I did. This is it. It's about love. Raj Shaw is my favourite director in the world. He is not my wife. He tells my wife where she should stand. And sometimes, like in our marriage, she agrees with him. Together, the three of us have tried to work out what the play is and what the play is about, and what we'd like an audience to take away with them after journeying with us. This play is about life and living and what happens when we're gone. So it's a clever, charming, innovative, soothing, warm, intimate, relaxing, comforting and aesthetically pleasing play. I feel that for me, this was a great end to 2019. So this was the last production that I saw and a brilliant start to the next decade. It makes you think about your own life and it's very poignant because it makes you think about what mark you will leave behind you when you leave this world. So it was a privilege to be in the audience and to experience this. It was an absolute joy to behold. It was a tour de force of storytelling. Julie is absolutely fantastic and it felt like a little kind of indulgent bedtime story community sat together in that very small intimate space. Top tips for the greatest play in the history of the world. Now, sadly, this production ran from the 26th of November till the 4th of January. So sadly, as I publish this podcast, you can't catch this. I'm hopeful that it will come back again. Having said that, if it doesn't, you can buy a copy of the play, which is published by Methew and Drama. And it's a really lovely read. It's only 38 pages long and would provide great monologues for exams or for auditions for actors or actresses. The Independent say that this production is about as close as theatre can come to being hugged for 70 minutes non-stop. Some reviewers call it a warm stew. I'm going to call it a lovely hot chocolate which soothes your throat before you go to sleep. So hopefully you'll get a chance to see this. If not, come to the Trafalgar Studios where A Taste of Honey is running and Coming Clean is about to start. And now for my finale and curtain call. A huge thank you to Ben Turner for our backstage chat at the National Theatre on the production of My Brilliant Friend. In episode 13, I go to press night of Coming Clean and chat to producer Darren Lee Murphy, actors and audience members at the Trafalgar Studios. This production runs from the 8th of January until the 1st of February. I'm also looking forward to having a chat with my drama school friend and talented actress, Sarah Alexander, who's performing in The Strange Tale of Charlie Chaplin and Stan Laurel at Wilton's Music Hall. This is part of the London International Mime Festival. And also Jason Kravitz is in his London shows Off the Top. These are from January the 13th to the 19th with guest stars including Josie Lawrence and Rachel Tucker. And he did a little spiel promoting this at the end of episode 11. Why not grab a ticket for one of the productions mentioned in this episode? Please tune in next time and recommend us to all your friends and family. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and do send us any recommendations of things you think we should see and review. If you've enjoyed the show, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe and rate us on iTunes and leave us a little review. I'm also now on Twitter at Theatre Audie Podcast. Until next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.